With the election right around the corner and our ever-expanding network of podcasts, including our most recent edition, Scylla Consciousness, there's never been a better time to become a member. In addition to no ads, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, access to our Discord community, and enhanced show notes for select shows. Our goal is to make the DSR Network membership accessible to everyone, so for the month of May, enjoy 60% off the normal monthly or annual price for the first month or first year. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code MAYDAY, one word, at checkout. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code MAYDAY. Thank you very much for your support.
Welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm David Rothkopf. Glad to be back. Missed you yesterday. Joined by Chris Kottner. How are you doing, Chris?
Doing fantastic, thanks.
Fantastic. And Riley Fessler. How are you, Riley?
Not as fantastic as Chris.
Well, who is, really? Nobody is as fantastic as Chris. But why don't you kick it off today, Riley? Maybe it'll get you going a little.
Well, Vladimir Putin was inaugurated for his fifth term as president of Russia in a grand ceremony replete with religious overtones, where he reiterated his portrayal of the invasion of Ukraine as a divinely sanctioned part of Russia's history. During the inauguration at the Kremlin's St. Andrew's Hall, Putin placed his hands on the Russian Constitution and vowed to uphold the rights and freedoms of all citizens, which is pretty rich. The head of the Russian Orthodox Church blessed Putin, framing his controversial decisions like the invasion of Ukraine as necessary and godly sacrifices. Putin's speech avoided new policy details but emphasized ongoing dialogues with the West, despite pretty obvious tensions. The event not only marked another term for Putin, which would potentially mark him as the longest-serving Russian leader since Catherine the Great, but also showcased his tightened grip on power.
Well, you know, he's another czar in a long tradition of czars. I'm sure that his acolyte, Donald Trump, was looking at all this saying, yeah, that's the way to do it, man. I wish I could do it that way. Five terms, religious overtones. I mean, Trump started, you know, think of himself as a religious figure these days with all that sort of religious imagery that some of his supporters use, and his statement the other day that we won't let people into the United States who don't believe in our religion. Now, you might say, why aren't you saying anything about Putin? But what is there to say? This is a fake election. It was never in doubt. He's still the leader. He has been for a long time. He will be for a long time. And we're going to have to deal with this guy. Is a real bad man. The way to deal with him is the way we're dealing with Ukraine. More arms from us, more arms from Europe. That's really what's going to determine his future more than anything else. Chris?
Israeli forces have taken operational control of the Rafah border crossing in Gaza, a critical point for humanitarian aid and civilian exit into Egypt amid ongoing military assaults in Rafah and surrounding areas. This move comes despite Israel's claims of the border being used for terrorist activities, with no evidence provided to support this assertion. The closure of Rafah, coupled with intensive military operations, including airstrikes on residential areas, has led to significant civilian casualties and further exacerbated the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Reports indicate that the assault had persisted despite potential truce discussions and international pleas to avoid escalating violence. The situation remains dire as civilians, urged to evacuate, face severe shortages of necessities due to the crossing's closure, complicating efforts to provide humanitarian aid and safe passage.
Yeah, and the humanitarian situation is dire. We had the head of the World Food Program, Cindy McCain, saying the other day that full-fledged famine is raging in northern Gaza. There was a report from the United Nations about mass graves and mistreatment of women and children in Gaza. So that situation is bad. As for the ceasefire talks, yesterday we went through a round of Hamas saying they accepted the Egyptian and Qatari proposals. Israel then saying, well, this isn't what we accepted, and blaming everybody but Israel for this misleading, you know, this misleading statement from Hamas, and then Israel pushing into Rafah. Meanwhile, the United States has come out and leaked stories and said, you know, that what Hamas agreed to was essentially everything that the Israelis had wanted, with two very minor changes, things that the Israelis should have agreed to. And so we've got a war of leaks going on here. Who to blame all this on? Bill Burns, who's been the leader on these negotiations, our director of Central Intelligence, remains in the region, is trying to get the Israelis to rethink their position on this. Reportedly, at least one report I saw said that this deal to which Hamas agreed did include the release of all the hostages and the bodies of hostages who died in custody. So, you know, it's a somewhat better deal than people had expected. Going into Rafah is seen by others as a sign that the Israelis just don't want a deal. And of course, the other day, Prime Minister Netanyahu said they were going into Rafah whether there was a deal or not. So, situation is fluid, concerning in Rafah, but there are some last-minute efforts to continue to say that the U.S. government is unhappy with how the Netanyahu government has handled this is an understatement. I have an article on this coming out from the Daily Beast in a little bit. Riley?
Millions of Indian voters cast their ballots in 93 constituencies amidst an intensely polarizing election campaign led by Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Employing increasingly divisive rhetoric, Modi targeted the Muslim minority in his speeches, labeling Muslims as infiltrators and accusing them of having large families to outnumber Hindus, which sounds awfully familiar to the Great Replacement Theory here in the U.S. He also alleged that the Indian National Congress Party planned to redistribute Hindu wealth to Muslims, stirring communal tensions. The elections, crucial for states like Karnataka, Gujarat, and Uttar Pradesh, could see Modi's BJP securing a significant majority as they capitalize on Hindu nationalist sentiments.
The ugly rhetoric from Modi is nothing new. The more time he spends in office, the more he gets extreme in his Hindu nationalist views. And again, it does sound familiar because this is the approach of Vladimir Putin. It's the approach of Viktor Orban. It's the approach of Donald Trump. It's the approach of Jair Bolsonaro. It's the approach of Bibi Netanyahu. This is what the new right in the world is doing, finding an other to blame, stirring up nationalism, trying to use that to dilute or counteract democracy in the country in some cases, relying on the support of others from the same movement internationally. Erdogan is another person who follows the same approach. It's ugly, and it's, you know, very much the prevailing trend in the world today, at least on the right. Chris?
During the criminal trial of former U.S. President Donald Trump, New York Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan found Trump in contempt for the 10th time for violating a gag order and warned him of potential jail time if his behavior continued. Despite the judge's stern warnings about jeopardizing the administration of justice, Trump has continued to publicly criticize the trial and insist on his right to free speech. even stating that he would go to jail for it. The trial, marking a significant phase in legal challenges against Trump, has also delved into payments made to Stormy Daniels, with Trump's former accountant testifying about the financial arrangements made to reimburse Michael Cohen for the hush money payment to Daniels, categorized inaccurately as legal costs in company records. I say, send the guy to jail for 2 days. You're getting 10 violations. 10. And what do we say? If you do it again, you're going to jail. Like, I don't think he's afraid of jail.
Well, I don't know. Maybe he's afraid of jail. I don't think they're going to send him to jail. They've warned him enough times, and I don't think, anybody wants to sort of trigger that political firestorm. They should. This is the 10th time. If he was anybody else, he would be in jail, or he'd be assigned to some work gang cleaning up litter in New York City parks, which I'd also wouldn't mind seeing. Instead, what really was important yesterday was perhaps the most boring day of the trial and legally the most significant, because documentation was presented that showed that, in fact, records were falsified in order to cover up the payments to Stormy Daniels in order to keep her story out of the paper in order to help Trump win. And they made the case look much tougher against Trump yesterday, because, again, it's not about he said, she said. It's about documentation, and there seems to be plenty of it. There's a little kerfuffle this morning as we head into the day with reports that Stormy Daniels will, in fact, be the witness today. If so, that will be quite a show and garner a ton of media attention. Riley?
Chad is poised to transition from military to democratic rule with its presidential election, marking a significant step among African nations recently governed by juntas. The election follows a 3-year transitional period initiated after the death of long-term leader Idriss Déby, with his son General Mahamat Déby among the leading candidates. Skepticism remains high regarding the potential for genuine change, particularly with reports of voting irregularities and a fatal shooting incident during the polls. The election features strong competition from Prime Minister Sukse Masra, who represents the main opposition, and urges massive voter turnout for change. Some citizens highly doubt the election's integrity, but others see it as an opportunity for a fresh direction, although concerns about the continuation of the Déby dynasty persist, given the historical context of entrenched leadership in Chad and the region.
We'll have to watch, but any step that even in a small way leads us towards more democracy in the region is a positive step. Any step that leads us more towards democracy in the world is a positive step, given the efforts by so many people, including the aforementioned Mr. Trump, to undermine democracy. In fact, that's one of the core stories we seem to be covering each and every day, like today, beginning with the undemocratic election of Russia's current czar, and ending with this small positive story. We'll do just as we've done today, look around the world, try to find some stories with some meaning each and every day here, and we'll continue with our usual round of other podcasts. Later today, we'll be putting together the next episode of Silic Consciousness, our new podcast on AI and AI-related issues, with the head of Washington's leading science and tech think tank, Rob Atkinson. You don't want to miss that one. And then continuing with our usual roster through the week. So join us for all of that. Have a good day. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Riley. And thanks to everybody for listening. Bye-bye.